Welcome to Plant Stories.
The modern, the old, and the crazy in between.
Myth or fact? Halloween, a traditionally harvest festival, was represented by the cornucopia overflowing with harvested goods. That one's a myth. They're not really associated at all. And that brings us into today's episode, Halloween! You know, all the creepy laughs.
Oh, I have many creepy laughs. It's almost unfortunate. Because I don't always mean to do them, you know what I mean?
Just wicked cackles.
Yeah, exactly. So, Halloween is really mostly an American holiday. And I feel like we know that. But we don't really know that. It started to spread a little bit more, you know, internationally. I don't think anyone, like, really hates the idea of dressing up.
And getting candy, yeah.
And getting candy, yeah. Free candy, very important part of Halloween. But surprisingly, the way that Halloween, you know, came to America is pretty interesting. And I do feel like some people know Halloween as, like, they're like, oh, it was, you know, like a Wiccan holiday or something like that. But it's really kind of much more complex than that. And so Halloween's origins are really thought to be the combination of a few kind of more traditional old holidays that have all morphed together to create modern day Halloween. The name Halloween itself, you know, comes from a Christian group of holidays, which is also interesting when you think about it like that. And that is because there is a group of holidays that kind of came along later, but the first holiday that's kind of considered the holidays that make Halloween is the Celtic holiday of the Samhain. So literally it means summer's end. And primarily it was an old pastoral and agricultural festival with three main components. So one was reorganizing the community. So when you're about to go into winter, you kind of have to reestablish who's doing what. You know, people aren't going to be working outside so much, especially in an area, you know, where it does get cold and gross during the winter. So it's kind of like reorganizing to have a functional community in the wintertime. The second thing that they really did was take stock of what they had accumulated throughout the year. And in a way, that's kind of like celebrating the harvest. So, you know, everybody brings in everything that they've harvested. They can see what kind of food they're going to have to bring them through the winter. Especially, you know, in Ireland, they did things like collect peat. And, you know, they did grow food like potatoes and turnips and things. And then, you know, what kind of animals you have, you know, left over. What animals you might possibly be slaughtering and what you might be keeping, you know, to get you through the tough winter months. And so that was kind of the second purpose of the holiday. And then the third holiday was part of the holiday was observing a period of supernatural intensity. So it was believed that on this particular day, the lines kind of between the supernatural and the natural were blurred. And it's important that in Celtic religion, this was kind of like the new year. November 1st was kind of like New Year's Day. This was the end of all the cycles. And that's kind of what made this boundary between the natural and supernatural world blur. And it gave the opportunity of ghosts of the dead to return to Earth and potentially for, you know, good and bad spirits to be let into the world. That was always a possible side effect of the supernatural harvest time. And so one of the really common rituals that was observed at this time was just burning really large bonfires and wearing costumes made from animal skins and heads. So, kind of like I mentioned, they did slaughter animals at this time, mostly to kind of like thin out the herd and have meat and things that they could store and prepare to last them through the winter time. And since they did that, they had animal skins and stuff available. It was kind of more than likely, it seemed like it was part of the whole like sacrificial rites of the holiday. And their intention was to scare away any evil spirits from either these costumes that the people were wearing or these very large, you know, bonfires, because the fires would essentially represent, like, you know, the pits of hell or whatever. And there's a lot of rumor that comes from, you know, these Celtic people possibly observing human sacrifice instead. So, you know, there were some accounts that said that they did these very barbaric things, and one of those things would be human sacrifice. It wasn't even always necessarily directly related to this holiday. More than likely, if they did do human sacrifices, it probably just wouldn't be reserved for this one day. But there's also no evidence, really, that points specifically to them doing that, even though now in kind of Halloween lore, it's one of those like scary things that people have brought about, like, oh, these ancient rituals of human sacrifice. The accounts that we do have primarily come from the Romans, and it's thought that they could be really exaggerated because the Celts were enemies of the Romans, people that they wanted to take over and demonize. So what better way to demonize someone than to say that they're barbaric and foreign?
So very questionable.
Yeah, it's definitely a really questionable kind of thought. One of the most prominent rumors that seems to be in kind of like a couple accounts was that of this thing called like a wicker man, and it's this structure made out of twigs and then supposedly like filled with men and set on fire. And that's like the idea of the wicker man.
Like a huge one filled with multiple men?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how plausible that is if you're making something out of twigs.
Yeah, very strong.
But, you know, there were other records that kind of like joked that sacrifices included like milk, corn, which like corn as we know it as Americans in historical literature of this kind really means like a compound of grains. It's not actual corn. And like 2/3 newly born children. They're like, yeah, those are the sacrifices, you know?
Oh, that's all.
Yes, that's it. That's it. That's all you have to do, you know? So, like I said, it's highly unlikely that, you know, druids were like peace-loving bards, like other people like to say they might have been, but it's really unknown if human sacrifice was a part of their rituals, and if they were, they were probably not exclusive to this event. Animal and livestock sacrifices would make more sense, and would have, you know, thinned out animal care in the winter months, so, you know, when you're worried about, like, not having enough hay and things like that to make sure that you're feeding everybody, that's kind of why you would do that anyway. And, I mean, primarily, at its core, this was a borderline festival. It was meant to signify the end of the harvest and the beginning of winter. There is also some scholarly sources who seem to think it's possible that there were other customs from Roman harvest festivals that kind of made it their way into Halloween. So we think about bobbing for apples as kind of a popular Halloween tradition. And there was a goddess named Pomona, who was the goddess of fruit and seeds, and her symbol was the apple. And some people think that may explain why bobbing for apples became a game associated with this holiday. It has been around for a very long time. The idea of bobbing for apples seems to exist even later than this, when we're talking about more Christian practices. So it could be possible that, you know, it came from this. And so, you know, this was commonly celebrated by the Celtic people for a very long time. And, you know, then kind of, you know, Christianity came in and changed a lot of stuff. And there was originally a group of days that celebrated the dead in Christian religion that was in May. But later they decided to move it and change it to the fall. So the first to kind of change these days were the French monastic order. And festivals included 6 days of religious obligation.
Wow.
Which is a lot longer than what we remember, but what has stuck around still are the observances of All Hallows Even, which is essentially Halloween, All Saints Day, and All Souls Day, which were basically days to celebrate people in heaven, but also to celebrate or help people in purgatory and try to pray for those souls and get them their passage into heaven. And so a lot of these same customs and things in certain areas that had celebrated these holidays before started to kind of celebrate them in these same days as All Hallows Even. It was still a time where there were big feasts, you know, big bonfires, community celebrations. And in the end, it really was a lot about, like, it was about the harvest and all that stuff, but it was also about, you know, coming together as a community in general. And so it kind of made it easy to have it transition into this holiday. And so one of the primary practices of this time was called souling. And souling was a ritual where people went from door to door asking for food in return for a prayer for souls in purgatory. And they actually carried hollowed out turnips with candles in them. And that actually represented, like, the soul in purgatory. And that was kind of the beginning of really trick-or-treating. You know, going door to door and, you know, doing something or saying something in return for something else. And jack-o'-lanterns, because they didn't really have pumpkins in, you know, Ireland at this time, or Great Britain at this time. So it was mostly turnips, and eventually it kind of morphed into these turnips and sometimes potatoes. They were often carved with scary faces, and they were used to scare away this spirit called Stingy Jack. And so the story of Stingy Jack is basically that he was this guy who, you know, decided to hang out with the devil, and he invited him for a drink, but he didn't want to pay for his drink. Go figure, because his name is Stingy Jack. And he convinced the devil to turn himself into a coin so that Jack could use the coin to buy their drinks. But once the devil did that, Jack decided to keep the money instead and put it into his pocket next to a cross. And that prevented the devil from changing back into his original form. And he kind of continued to trick the devil for a little while. He, like, tricked him into climbing up a tree and then carved a cross in the tree so it couldn't come down. and all this stuff. But eventually Jack died, and as the legend goes, you know, God wouldn't allow this unsavory figure into heaven. And, you know, he wasn't friends with the devil. Devil didn't really want him around either. And so instead he would be kind of like roaming around on these nights after God wouldn't let him in, and, you know, playing tricks and things. And so the idea was carving these faces into these vegetables was a way to keep him at bay. And kind of both of these things ended up being one of the ways that the laboring class really enforced the idea of charity during the winter time. So I don't know if you've ever heard about Christmas either, with like Christmas caroling and things like that, but in the wintertime, it was often really the poor who suffered the most. They didn't have the storage or whatever to really make it through the winter without help. And so this was a ritual really of being able to kind of convince or force the poor into charity, which honestly I'm kind of a fan of. Tricky, you know. They get you though. But the primary part of this holiday that ended up being taken from Samhain were the ideas that superstitious things could happen at this time. So Halloween in some areas was known as Puka Night because of the imps that would come and kill crops. Marriage vitality could be foretold by like nuts in a fire. Again, women would put sprigs of rosemary under their pillow to have dreams of future husbands, because apparently the only thing women did at this time were try to figure out if they'd have to marry some really horrible, gross man or not. You know the deal. And women born on Halloween were considered to have supernatural powers and an unusual capacity to tell the future. So basically me. I'm just saying.
We had some minor technical difficulties, but back to where we were at. Tell us the truth!
I'm definitely a witch, if you have questions. I am, in fact, a supernatural being. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was that much of a secret, but I also felt I should say it out loud for you.
Mm-hmm. I'm super close. I'm on the cusp. I'm just 2 days less powerful than you.
That's fair. That is definitely fair. But yeah, so these were a bunch of rituals that were kind of like mixed with the old Samhain days and the new Catholic days. But then they started, not liking Catholics so much during the Protestant Reformation. So in major cities, a lot of these celebrations were dropped. However, it survived in some of the, you know, more minor cities where there was less policing over religious festivals and kind of the people in general. And so, yeah, it didn't survive in all of Great Britain, but it did survive in many areas. Kind of the issue became there was no set group of practices for observing these holidays. And even after this point, kind of some more holidays came on in. So another holiday that ended up being around this time was November 5th, Bonfire Night, otherwise known as the Gunpowder Plot or Guy Fawkes Day, which was known as the Night of Mischief. And it became especially prevalent after the 1850s, and it was more representative of the changes in power in Britain. And then in Ireland, the birthday of William of Orange was November 4th and was more popular than Halloween. And it became Halloween kind of in the 18th century. And even though it was still prevalent, this birthday was more important in a lot of places. And it was actually mostly considered a Scottish holiday. It was considered the most prevalent there. In some places, the more kind of like Celtic theme practice was differentiated from All Souls Days, but they still kind of considered these days to be a time of high superstition. So even if people didn't necessarily celebrate Halloween, people were like highly suspicious of this time for some reason. And progressively this superstition turned from, you know, like making this day about like saving souls and stuff to like just thinking that creepy things are going to come get you in the night.
Mm-hmm. Things are after you. You gotta hide from them in costumes and have big bonfires. But then also it's somebody's birthday.
But also eat apples. But also, yeah. You know, there's lots of things going on at this time. And Halloween itself continued to be a pretty important day in the agricultural cycle. So it was at this time that people renting land renewed leases. Cottages were rethatched, crops were gathered, animals were slaughtered, peat was gathered from bogs for the winter time. And interestingly, or maybe not interestingly to you, I don't know what your likes and dislikes are, but the most common food associated with this time was potatoes.
Yeah.
And so potato dishes, especially one called, that I'm probably saying wrong because I don't speak any Gaelic, colcannon. Which is like cabbage and garlicky potatoes. It actually sounds pretty good. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Sounds standard.
But there continue to be kind of all these practices at this time of doing things like people would read apple peels to see if they could figure out the first letter of their future partner's name. Or like pull up vegetables and like the deciding like shape that they had would determine, you know, some aspect of your future. Mm-hmm. And really, the biggest part of these traditions came from the strength of their oral traditions. So a lot of like small towns and things in these areas had their own kind of specialized Halloween, you know, celebrations. There were kind of like mischief night. It was the night, you know, considered like one of the more potentially, you know, superstitious nights of the year, and people really kind of like brought that with them. So originally, you know, when the United States was founded, Halloween was not a popular thing really at all, especially in New England, because Puritans thought that Halloween was the devil's holiday. Oh, they're like, we ain't bringing the devil's holiday up in here, you know.
Mm-hmm. Why celebrate of all of these superstitions and shins and stuff?
Yeah, no, they didn't like that. A little bit later in Maryland and some of the southern colonies, there were some people who celebrated, maybe not exactly the Halloween that, you know, obviously we're thinking of, or even that the Irish were thinking of at the time, but where religion was slightly more lenient, there was still some of that kind of superstition and, like, a general harvest holiday. And there eventually became these kind of Halloween-like parties in certain towns, and they were called play parties, where the harvest would be celebrated by telling stories of the dead, the telling of fortunes, dancing and singing. And then in the mid-19th century, it kind of progressed to where a lot of places had autumn festivals, but not everywhere had these kind of like Halloween-like festivities.
So a lot of like harvest things, but not supernatural things.
Right. And some people celebrated the harvest kind of still believing that that time had some of these kind of like supernatural abilities, or, you know, were when superstitious things were more likely to happen, but they didn't necessarily directly relate them back to Halloween in that way. And so in the late 19th century, as I'm sure some people know, there was a flood of Irish and some Scottish immigrants, you know, to the Americas. And many of them kind of started to consider Halloween to be a holiday of cultural importance for them. So happy music and, you know, festive costume would grace a lot of spaces. And they almost kind of like classed it up from what it might have originally been back at home to make it a more like culturally like immigrant holiday, if you will. Like they wanted it to be special to them in America. And so, you know, it made it this popular community celebration, especially in the later 1800s. And that's also when they began making jack-o'-lanterns out of pumpkins. And that's primarily because pumpkins are native to this area, and they discovered that they were super easy to carve out compared to, I don't know, like a potato.
Way
easier. And, yeah. and they were easy and abundant to get here.
I did not expect that the reason we have Halloween today would be because of the Irish immigrants. I did not see that coming.
Little did you know. I'm here to tell the truth, y'all. Yeah. I'm here to tell the truth. Yep, that's what I'm here to do. And so this quickly grew into a more commercial holiday. Masks started being sold in stores. Not the masks we know today, but general masks. And popular fall foods, you know, became more in demand. So we're talking apples, figs, raisins, oranges, nuts like pecans, almonds, walnuts, chestnuts, filberts, Brazil nuts. Things that you could get for your party or community gathering. And it was also this time that candy started really being sold as well, especially because candy was considered like relatively inexpensive, so you could have it in abundance. And much like the earlier customs of greeting guests with, you know, the hollowed out turnips with candles and asking for a treat, it kind of became common that some young men and sometimes women carrying lit pumpkins while in costume kind of went around asking for cakes or apples or nuts or money. I wish that was what we were looking for, right? but it was in return for like a song or a rhyme. So you wouldn't necessarily go up and be like trick or treat. You'd be like, I'll sing you a song if you give me a cake. Kind of deal.
It's also very different than I'll pray for your loved one's soul in hell.
If you just give me a cake. And it's interesting, too, because when they did that, they actually used to give something called soul cakes. You can look up a recipe and still make soul cakes today. I was going to suggest that you do that for your birthday since you were going to get into baking, Krista.
Oh, yeah. I did that last year, actually.
Yeah. Soul cakes.
I made them with, like, cute little... actually used a ravioli cutter to give them like cute edges.
Yeah, they're cute.
Yes.
But the same kind of thing went for this. And by 1900, it seemed that Halloween had mostly been appropriated from its kind of like original Celtic moorings, especially as a holiday that didn't like come directly from one ethnic group, as it kind of began like adopting all these very American things with it. And for a certain period, it kind of like became this very mischievous holiday. Like they kind of had to stop doing Halloween for a while because people were like destroying property and stuff.
Vandalism.
Yeah, because that became, mischief became a big part of it, and kind of like people were more willing to put up with mischief on Halloween because they were expecting it a little bit, I guess. I don't know. That would never fly today, but. And during World War II, trick-or-treating was halted because sugar was not readily available, but afterwards, kind of advertising candy as a treat just like came back in full force.
Overcompensating.
Yeah, and kind of brought it back. Eventually, Thanksgiving also took precedence as the primary, like, fall harvest feast in the United States. And that's what really kind of changed Halloween from a harvest festival into, like, a night of mischief and partying. And it even also became a little bit gendered. So, you know, women were the ones who held social gatherings at home with their friends, like cooking meals, and like standing in front of mirrors to consult with supernatural forces. You know, to see how their social standing might change. And then, you know, like men just like went and wreaked havoc on local neighborhoods with pranks and like destroying property and like messing with the police and stuff. So interesting.
Went wild, and then women gathered and started learning how to like tell fortunes.
Exactly. About what kind of men they were eventually going to marry, you know, of the men that were currently out destroying town. So, you know, very
typical.
They
didn't want them around anyways.
No, I know. But yeah, it is kind of interesting. And so then, you know, trick-or-treating kind of eventually morphed into what it is today, which is even further away from the traditional harvest and sound rituals when communities began, like, giving children treats and setting up small haunts, really to keep people out of trouble on Halloween night. Like, as trouble increased, communities were like, alright, what can we do to, like, stop this? What can we do that's still fun, but doesn't prank my neighbor or destroy my stuff? What can we do? And they were like, I got it. We'll get all the kids involved. We're just gonna keep doing the thing we were sort of doing. We're gonna go hard. Okay? We're gonna go real hard. Costumes for everyone. Plastic pumpkins for everyone. Candy for everyone. Let's do it. And they were like, alright. And it blew up, kind of, into what we know. Yeah. You know, Halloween today, it still carries some of the mashup of the harvest season, with the supernatural also kind of being a way to express and become comfortable with, like, the weird and scary. Which is kind of what we've made it into, I think.
And I really like the idea of the haunted house. That's also like a great, like, modern tradition, I think, that people like will go so intensely with all these decorations, and like businesses will create these entire experiences for you to just go through and experience the scary. Although
yeah,
I've been to some creepy ones done by churches, but you know.
Yeah, pick your stage. Some of those are interesting, but it's become a very American holiday, that is for sure. It's been exported out to other countries, but, you know, it's been, like, over 100 years, really, since it began here. I would say it has also been very popular in Canada as well. And it's really grown out from its original Christian undertones, even, and has just been Americanized into this night of, like, fun, feast, fancy frolics, and, you know, frightful events. Which is kind of an interesting thing to think about as well. Like, it definitely, at some point, like I think many other holidays, the Christian religion was like, all right, how do we make this into, like, what we want it to be? Like, how do we let them think they're still getting their way to, like, do something that, like, we want to do?
They really let it become secular, though. Like, they just let the All Souls, All Saints, All Hallows even just, like, falls away side.
Yeah, I mean, we did, I think, as Americans. And I think then, like I said, once the Protestant Reformation kind of came and Catholicism wasn't as well looked upon a thing there, you know, they're like, okay, so now it's not about that.
I don't know if it's just the circles that I'm in, but I feel like when I talk to people about their favorite holiday, Halloween is definitely up there.
I think it's like a holiday that's not, its whole purpose is kind of for fun now. You know, it does signify fall, it is kind of the first time that you really like, I mean, Thanksgiving is a very like home holiday, you know?
Right.
It's very much like, you're going home, you're sitting with family. This is like a holiday for everyone. This is a uniting holiday in a lot of ways. because it's really the last time before it starts to get cold that you go out and, like, party for a reason. Right. Thank the Irish, because they gave us St. Patrick's Day, too, I'm just saying.
Well, we Americans really formed that into a partying holiday. That's not what it's supposed to be.
Well, that's not what this was supposed to be either, but here we are. I'm just saying.
For sure. Good job, Irish. You know how to party.
They gave us the idea, and we turned it into something worse.
And, what would you say are some of the ways that you've grown up celebrating Halloween?
I mostly had parties. Halloween is my birthday, which I've said like 5 times already, but what I mean by that is, like, I always had, like, Halloween birthday parties, and people were like, oh, your birthday's on Halloween, you must be a witch. And I'm like, well, I am, but it's really not your place to say, I'm just saying.
Were they always costume parties?
Costume parties, so many costume parties. There were a couple times where I convinced my parents to have other parties. But also, like, the day of my actual birthday was spent with everyone else. Like, just because it was my birthday didn't mean I wanted to miss out on trick-or-treating. If anything, I wanted people to give me extra things when I went places. So.
Best of both worlds.
Exactly. And it's also because of, you know, this whole morph that we've seen happen that Halloween is specifically geared towards children. Although adults participate in Halloween parties and passing out candy, and we do like to use Halloween as a form of expression, I think, especially when we become adults. There's a lot of, like, humor and stuff and picking out Halloween costumes, but, you know, more so than some other holidays, it gives children, I think, a lot of, like, united holiday memories. Like, no matter, you know, if your parents allow you to celebrate Halloween, you know, your religion or, you know, where you come from, all that stuff doesn't matter, because on Halloween you're somebody else anyway. So I think in that way it's very uniting. But it's also the second most commercial holiday in the United States, beaten only by Christmas, so.
Meaning that it's like money raising?
Oh yeah. Yep. People spend a lot of money on Halloween.
Yeah, that's true.
That's probably why it's so sad that it's not happening this year.
I know, I gotta find my own, like, housemate celebration.
Exactly. And just in case you were looking for some other fun facts.
I am.
Illinois actually produces the most pumpkins of any state, which is around 500 million pounds of pumpkins per year.
Good for them.
They're killing it.
I bet they have phenomenal pumpkin patches and, like, corn mazes and stuff.
I bet they do, yeah. And Keene, New Hampshire holds the world record for the most jack-o'-lanterns on display, with 30,581 pumpkins.
Whoa. Was all that, like, something once they just did once? Do you think they still do that sometimes?
I think they still try to do it. It looked like they try to, like, outbeat themselves occasionally. But I don't know. I didn't look more into it other than that. I just know that they hold the world record for that.
This year was the first year that I grew my own pumpkins. I've got 2 dozen scoured all over my property. So that was a nice thing to just have, like, a nice pumpkin patch growing in my backyard and then to harvest them. And most of them are, like, the really, like, bumpily, ugly looking ones. I love those.
Yeah. Pumpkins are great. And Halloween is pretty interesting. I think there's a lot of, like, misconceptions about, like, what it is and where it comes from. So I thought it would be nice to clear that up for everybody and explain why it kind of is related to the harvest and how we made it not so related to the harvest.
But you can always make whatever traditions you want.
Yes, personally, that is also accurate.
I love having a feast on Samhain. That's what I call it. I make as much food as possible and try to feed all of my friends as much as possible, so.
I just come over to your house.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, happy birthday. Come hang out with me.
I'm like, feed me, please.
Yes, we have a lot of birthdays that week in our circle of friends. Yeah, growing up, I definitely had the classic experience of, well, I should say a little more homemade. My mom would make some really great costumes. When I got a little older, I would make my own. And probably one of my best ones was a pile of leaves. So I had a red sweatshirt, like hoodie and sweatpants and sneakers. And then I just had like the vines of fake leaves wrapped all around me. And then I also had some real leaves on me the day of. And then I like totally covered my face in them. And then I just walked around with a rake.
Cute.
Yeah, it was really perfect camouflage. So I would just like lay down and then I could jump up and scare people.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
I was often just a witch. I was like, yeah, let me show you my true colors. This is where we're at.
Mm-hmm. I would go to haunted houses, especially if you can, like, if you got the money and the transportation to go to the ones that are, like, on farms that are huge and they, like, hire a bunch of different people. Also, if you're looking for seasonal work, obviously not this year, but maybe next year, that seems like such a fun job.
I don't have any tips for you, except that you should enjoy Halloween. Mm-hmm. However you would like to do that.
It can be a good time to reflect on the past year and on the people that have passed away. I personally have had a few people, and so I'm going to have some nice framed photos of them and light some candles and share some stories with my housemates about them. And probably eat a huge homemade chicken pot pie. That's what I'm craving.
That sounds good.
I believe we're going to be taking a week off to celebrate our birthdays. But do you know what our next episode is going to be?
No, I don't. I'm going to surprise you.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. Well, thank you all for joining us on our latest special edition episode of Plant Stories. This was Halloween, a history of the supernatural harvest time. I hope you all have a great time finding fun ways to celebrate, even if it's just hiding candy around your house and hunting for it. We look forward to you joining us on our next surprise episode. Check us out on Instagram, on Facebook for updates, and I'm sure we'll have some great music for this episode. I hope you enjoy it.
Bye!
Bye!